Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Billy Blade. This is the Biggest Little Show on radio. My guest tonight happens to be a good friend of mine. He's a good friend of all of yours. He's a great part of our Cauliflower Alley reunions as well. He was known as the Midnight Rider. He's also Sam Houston. Sam Houston is on the line. How are you doing, Sam?
Hey, man, I'm doing great, Billy. I'm glad to be here, and thank you so much for having me on, man. This is cool.
Oh, for sure, man. And you know what? Every time your name, I kept seeing your name on Facebook. I see all your posts, everything like that. Very supportive of this country, this amazing country of the United States. And I know that you, I was like, man, I have to keep getting him on the radio, keep getting, and I keep forgetting. And I'm like, oh, I saw an opportunity. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get him on here. And
Definitely. Well, can I tell you something about my posts on Facebook and everything? Man, I've traveled around the world. Yeah, I've traveled around the world. You know, this business, the wrestling business, has got me around the world 8 times. You know, I've been to all the other countries. I've witnessed other cultures. I've witnessed conditions they live in. Man, when I was in New Guinea, I was almost eaten by cannibals twice.
Oh, gosh.
I'm talking about people running up with a Tarzan loincloth, carrying a spear with a big grass knife and bows and arrows. If it hadn't been for the Australian Army, me and Charlie Norris would have been dinner. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Around here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is the greatest country on the planet, you know, as far as technology, as far as things working. You know, in England, if you go to the sink and you turn the hot water on, the hot water comes on. Turn the cold water on, the cold water. If you turn them both on together, like over here, the water is warm when it comes out. Over there, it's hot on one half and cold on the other half.
It's
not the same advancements. I mean, we don't know how good we got it. I mean, you walk down the street in Japan and you see the steel grating on the sidewalk. Well, that's because they don't have sewage pipes. It's just an open sewage that, you know, because it stinks a lot.
Well, yeah. You know, when I went to Japan, I was like blown away because like, yeah, we don't realize what we have. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, for example, McDonald's, you know, like over here, you get a large or let's say an extra large soda. It's huge. Over there, their large sodas are small. And so I was like, whoa, you know, and then their bathtub.
Well, not only that, the toilets.
You know, the toilets are in the floor.
Yeah. So
have you ever tried
floor,
to
you don't...
in a toilet in the floor?
I've been over there. Yeah. I've been over there 5 times, so I learned a trick. You go to the bathroom with a steel chair, and you turn it sideways, and you use the legs. Yeah, poor old Rod Price. We were at a restaurant one night, and you got to take your shoes off and everything. And Rod had to go to the restroom. So when he come out of the bathroom, big emergency, because he's 280 pounds. He was holding on to a pipe to balance himself. He come out, he had broke the pipe. He was all wet. He didn't have no socks on when he come back to the dinner table.
I always thought that was crazy because with guys like, you know, yourself, obviously you've been wrestling. We'll get into that right now. And you know, in decades, you know. So like myself, when I was in Japan, I think I've been in 10 years at that point, man. And me even having to do a squat, you know, to even go to the shitter was pretty hard to just hold it there, you know. So I definitely appreciated what we
but
had.
But I enjoyed, because, I mean, what we've got, nobody can touch this. I mean, yeah, there's beautiful places all over the world, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from that. But it's also very primitive, you know, in other countries and cultures, you know. And it, like when I went to France over there, I could not – the people hated us. They cheered Nikolai Volkov. We're supposed to be one of France's allies. They cheering a Russian over me, and this is at the height of the Cold War, you know. So it's kind of I'm wondering where you're political. Maybe y'all just hate me that much, you know. Anyway. I was just going to say, see, this business has been, it's been really rough on me. You know, I've been in it all my life. I was born into it. My father was Grizzly Smith. You know, he was a big headliner back in the, he started in the 58 and throughout the 60s and 70s. You know, he wrestled, and then he was my tag team partner when he was 66 years old one night, and that was a dream come true for him, you know. But I've been on the road. I went to 21 different schools before. I mean, 21 different regions of the country before I started the first grade. You know, we were territory to territory. So my friends were the guys in the dressing room growing up, really, you know. And so so I've always had that camaraderie, and I've always been around that rib pulling and everything else, but I've been on the road all my life, and I've got some interesting stories. I should be dead 1,000 times over, but I'm not.
Well, you know,
and I got to give that
to the biggest little show on radio.
I think about this kind of stuff all the time, you know. I have got, like, okay, I want all your listeners to know, I used to be a big, bad drinker. I mean, my drinking started when I was, like, 7 years old, I'll say. It got to the point where I was feared I drank so much. I could stand there with Andre just about. I did for 8 months, traveled with him on the road in WWF, and I was in the bar with him every night, you know. I'm not saying I could out drink him or anything like that. I couldn't, but in my heyday, this is my heyday. I was drinking three fifths for 19 years. I drank anywhere from 1 to 3 fifths a day, almost every day of my life. There were three times in that 19 years, I had a year sober, you know, but now I got 11 years sober, you know, and I did this because I come to some realizations, man. And I want to tell y'all about it all, you know. I want to tell you what's going on with me. And so if you got any kind of questions and stuff like that, I'd be more than happy to tell you. When I was 17, that's when I first really the first time I died, I had my tonsils taken out and the doctor messed up. And then my whole life just went from there. Yeah. Have you ever noticed those scars on my neck, Billy?
You know, I noticed you wear something on your neck a lot. I figured that's probably something there. You know what I mean?
Well, I've got two scars because, when I was 17 years old, the doctors went to take my tonsils out. And they nicked my pharynx during the surgery, and I had a massive heart attack and died on the operating table. This is after I had been in the recovery room. My dad busted down the door. The heart doctor said I've got 30 minutes to live. They ran me upstairs, and they slipped me on one side of the neck and then slipped me on the other side of the neck and ran tubes, rubber tubing, down in my throat. When they nicked my pharynx, they had it's like putting air in a tire. They had just opened that hole up in my chest cavity in my head. All the skin tissue, I filled up like a basketball. And that caused me, the anesthesia caused a massive heart attack. And I was flatlined for 2 minutes, and then I came out. Go ahead.
Jeez. No, I didn't say, so let me ask you. So when you, you said obviously you've been around the business your whole life because obviously Grizzly Smith was your father. Obviously you had a Jake Roberts with your stepbrother, Rockin' Robin, I think, was your sister. So, I mean, you've been around this business. So, I mean, before you even really knew the business, like a lot of people, they don't, you know, like myself, I think I started early 20s or maybe in my teens.
Yeah,
I mean,
see,
you've been around
I got
your whole
whooped.
Yeah,
yeah,
you,
I was
been,
9
so
years
you know,
old. Yeah,
I was just
let me
say,
tell
you've
you
been
my
in the business
my
so long.
Oh yeah, all my life really basically. Dad used to take me on interviews when I was like in first and second grade, you know. I'd go to the interviews to watch him, but then he'd take me out and he'd put me on TV with them. You know, and then that was cool. And then for Channel 5 there in Alexandria, Robin and I went and we did some promos when we were, you know, like first, third grade, something like that. I don't know. So
yeah.
Every once in a while we got little things like that. Well, I was 9 years old, and my dad's tag team partner, Luke Brown, had come down, and he had taken the job as a referee. What later became Mid-South. At the time, it was Leroy McGurk's NWA championship wrestling. So Uncle Luke was driving the ring truck, and he was setting the ring up by himself. So I'd get to the matches, and I was 9 years old. I'd help him set the ring up. You know, he'd pay me a few bucks. Well, I was 11 years old. My dad got his head run into the ring post, and I jumped over the railing. And I saw something maybe I didn't need to see or something. So that night I got a bottle of wine and I got, you know, the business run down to me. And then then that smartened me up to a business part of it and everything else. And then then it was like somebody didn't show up. There wasn't a timekeeper, so Dad would throw me his watch. I'd keep time for the matches, and that was a big highlight. 5 minutes gone by, 55 minutes left in the match, you know?
Yeah.
For a 12-year-old kid, that's an awesome thing, man. I'm part of the show.
You got everything right in front of everybody.
And then I was working at gas stations. I'd get dropped on the side of the road, and the grappler would be broke down with his Lincoln, and Dad would pick him up and leave me on the side of the road because I could fix it and get it to the next show, you know?
Man, the way things were, right? I mean, man, that's like nowadays, I mean, you obviously, you do that, man, you're considered a bad father. But, like, I used to remember times, not so much like that, but, I mean, when I was a kid, man, I used to love riding in the back of a truck. Man, you can't do that in the least in California. You can't do that, you know?
And, you can't drink water out of a water hose no more, huh?
Yeah, you could drink out of a hot water hose, man. I used to drink out of water hose all the time, man. I was like, that was the thing, you know? Nowadays, you can't do anything like that. It's funny how scared people are, I guess, so to speak. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong, sometimes it's bad, but, you know, like that's how you learn it, you know?
I don't know where. I mean, maybe I was locked up when society went crazy. I think I was, because I mean, folks today are off the deep end. All this stuff going around now, it's you. You know, and I pray for folks.
You know?
They do, and you know,
I mean,
I'll be the first
I
one.
Remember
I'll,
having
somebody.
Oh, go ahead. I remember had to pick my switch. You remember that?
Yeah.
Switch off the tree, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Granny would say, Granny.
Yeah.
You go get the smallest one you can. Oh, that big log's going to hurt me, you know. Granny hears this one, and she's like sitting there laughing. You know, and in the back of the top of the legs and stuff, you can dance, you know. But
a belt, get the belt, get the switch. I think the kids definitely need that these days, because if they had discipline like we did, look at us. I mean, we all came out okay. You know, so,
yeah. Hey, Billy, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, like, how political you are, your listeners are, or anything like that, you know, but, oh, gosh, there's so much more going on out there in the world today than just these small little issues that, you know, that we're being seen through media and stuff like that. I don't know, but, you know, with all this disturbances and hysteria and riots and stuff, we've taken our eyes off of what's really important, the Benghazi things, the things that's going on with, you know what I'm saying? We're letting the left is getting away with murder right now. And it's not all everybody. See, oh gosh, when I was locked up, I did a lot of studying. And one of the books I read it three times, is called Behold a Pale Horse. It was written by William Cooper, who was naval intelligence. He's all over YouTube. You know, he's got film of the Kennedy assassination, where you can see the gun in the hand of the Secret Service agent driving the car. You know, anyway, he was naval intelligence. He was a radio dispatcher back when George Bush, the first George Bush, was head of the CIA in Cuba in 63 when all that happened. So this guy's got credentials. This guy's got credentials. He lays down out everything from, you know, the Committee of Foreign Relations, everything. You know, and the people need to go, they need to follow the money. You know, I'm not going to sit here and make anybody's mind up. I know the truth. You know, and the truth is out there, but it's like anything, if you want to know the truth for yourself, don't have me tell it to you. Go look it up for yourself. That way you can make your decisions. I don't want to be the one telling you, you know,
oh, yes,
to do something. You know,
I agree. No, and
you're
going
to fight me all the way.
And I want you to, I mean, we don't pull punches here. If you, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to let everybody know, because here's the thing. We are Americans and we're entitled to our opinions. You're entitled to your opinions. And the great news about my show is you can say whatever fuck you want. I don't, because the thing is how I look at it when it comes to our show is it's wrestling. It's, you know, it's whatever, you know, whatever you want to talk about. This is your time to talk about it. And the thing is, I've seen your posts and I've seen a lot of other people's posts. And I will tell you, I'm not a political guy. Just honestly, I'm just not one of those people that are, I'm not into politics or anything like that. Cause I don't think really any president or any has really ever done what they say they're going to do. But I will tell you that. And like I tell all my wrestling students and this and that, and I'm legit with them. I said, look, I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for anybody, but I would tell you, if people are treating Trump the way they're treating Trump, and if they treated Obama the same way, like if they were in another country, they would be taken out the way they're treating the president, you know. And it's sad. And like you said, the world we live in. I mean, the protest. I understand the protests, and I'm not against the protests. It's everything else, you know, like everything else around
it's
the protest.
Yeah, rioting and looting and the destruction of property. You know, just because you want to protest doesn't mean you can come destroy something that's not yours, you know?
Exactly.
You can't come up. You're not coming over into my yard. You know, when you're locked, I started out. Let me let your listeners know. Whenever I went down hard, okay? I had gotten pulled. I'd had an argument with a girlfriend. I had had one drink. I left the house. I was going to the halfway house. I was two blocks away, got pulled over for an improper lane change. They smelled the alcohol, but they didn't have enough to charge me. So they hit me with an improper lane change. I bonded out of jail, went to check myself into CentiCor, a two-year-long rehab program. 3 months to the day, I went to court to go pay a ticket for an improper lane change. They told me they didn't have probable cause to charge me with the DWI. As many times as I drank and drive, I should be under the jail. I'm thankful that I'm a free man now. But I got to the courthouse. They threw out the improper lane change and hit me with fourth offense DWI. I looked at the DA and I told him, I said, I've never had a third offense DWI.
Yeah.
So how can you be the fourth? He says, if I have to redo the paperwork, he goes, I'm going to hit you with the Habitual Offender Act, and you'll never get out of prison. He said, if you sign off on it, I'll give you 10 years. You'll do half of it, and you'll be out on parole. He goes, if not, you'll do 30 flat.
Wow. Wow. Well, when you get
put in
that, you have to do what you do, right? Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, so I started. I I climbed back. Yeah, just a second. They put me into a maximum security disciplinary camp because I'm a security threat. I'm a professional wrestler. So I was in the worst. I was in the worst jail, in the worst, with the worst attitudes, with the worst people. These are the people they can't control. And we're in 93 man dorms. You know, there was 2 to 5 fights a night, and fights always had locks with strings and the whole nine yards. And I got in my big stuff after 7 months. But that's what, you know, got me out of there. But I crawled back from a foot locker, cockroach infested foot locker with a bar of state soap and some boxer shorts to where I'm at today. You know, and in prison, I found myself. You know, do you had something to say?
Oh, no, I was agreeing with you. I mean, I real quick, I want to let people listening, like, we are talking with Sam Houston, and again, he has a great story to, you know, for you to listen to, and you know, everybody come, you know, have been on hard times, and obviously came through it, and yourself, this is the story you're talking about, and I hope you guys are listening. But I was agreeing to you about it. I was agreeing with what you were saying, by the way. So yeah, just keep talking. I'll try to cut you off when I need to. If I want to say something, because I'll forget, man. So.
Yeah, I got you. No, I mean, when they first locked me up, they put me on murderer's row in Baton Rouge, you know, and that was 30. There was 39 of the very worst people that you could imagine in the parish. Child molesters, murderers. You know, my cellie had shot a guy and then poured gasoline on him and lit him on fire.
Well, how old were you when you went to prison?
This was in 2000.
What'd you say?
Yeah, 2010, 2009, 2010, right around there.
No, this
actually,
when
was when
in?
I went.
Okay.
To, uh-huh.
Okay.
You know, and when I walked in, when they first took me in there, they took the chains off of me. This old black man come up to me, and I'd seen him on the news. He goes, "My name's Matthews. I killed 3 white women. What'd you do?" And I looked at him dead in the face, and I told him, "Improper lane change." You know, everybody backed away from me because they didn't know what, you know, why would a guy for improper lane change be put in, especially because I was kind of big, too. Anyway, and everything, that place was okay till they found out who I was. One of the deputies had worked security for an event I did and ran some stuff off. And then I got in five altercations in 2 days and then 2 more altercations a couple of days later. But I never had to strike anybody or never had to hit them. When they were coming, I would turn into a wrestler. I would grab them. I thanked Dean Malenko. I told Dean when I first got out, I went and sought him out and shook his hand. His Texas cloverleaf saved me a few times. But I'd put them in something, and I wouldn't let go until they're screaming and hollering, told you don't let go and you don't stop beating until the guards get there. So if you kill somebody, you kill somebody. That's just how it is in there. You know, a beast, that's what a beast is. You know?
Yeah, my brother's been in there since he was 17. He's I'm 43 now. He's 41. So 26 years now, you know what I mean? Like so yeah, he's been in the California area. So he tells me stories, you know, and because of him really inspires me not to be, you know, in there if I can help it, you know what I mean? But like
that's
you said,
oh,
you got to survive. Survival to fitness,
you know,
over there, right?
Yes, sir. Well, it's guerrilla warfare, you know?
Yeah,
And I'm not saying that to be racist or nothing like that. I mean, it's jungle warfare. It's the survival of the fittest. If you want something, you take something.
Yeah.
If you think you're man enough, you know? But, you know, something's coming with that.
Now, let me ask you. So you were, were there, you know, obviously for the DUI, kind of, you know, like it was obviously lane change, DUI, whatnot, and they gave you a smaller sentence, obviously, if you or you get that 30 sentence. So obviously you did the right thing, took your sentence. Myself, I've been sober now for about almost a year, which obviously
that is awesome.
Sober, yeah. Especially with the industry we were in, you know, it's not easy. And then you been doing it 11 years, like sober for 11 years now. So what can you tell the listeners? Like, what kind of advice can you give, like, someone that's like struggling with something like that, like, you know, alcohol abuse? So it doesn't matter what kind of, you know, whatever. They're addicted.
You're an athlete,
you know?
You're an athlete, so you're going to know. And I hope your listeners that they have something in their life that they can, you know, guide that passion or that will towards. But you know how when you zone in or zone out, you know, get in the zone or something.
Yeah.
Okay, what you have to do with the alcohol, because the alcohol wasn't taken from me right away. Let me tell you my cellie was a murderer. He knew how to fix the bars, and he would walk down the hallway. Well, one night I'd been in that cell for 2 days. I couldn't deal with it no more. Spending 10 years of my life like this or the 30 years in prison, I couldn't deal with it. I took my sheet. I slid it with my razor. I braided it together. I ran it through the bars. I made two nooses. I got on the top rack. I put the nooses around my neck. I looked up. I said, God, only you can stop this now. And I jumped. Both nooses broke. They didn't tear. They didn't rip. They didn't undo. They broke. I carry part of the sheet with me today. They broke. I hit the ground so hard I could not. My feet were bruised for weeks. I'm a guy that jumps over the top rope every night. My feet were bruised. I couldn't hardly walk. You know, I hit the floor so hard. So I dropped to my knees that night, and I promised God I wasn't gonna try to hurt myself no more. 5 days later, my mom died. They came and they chained me up and they took me to the chaplain, and they took me in there. The chaplain said, your mom's dead. You can use the phone. You know?
Yeah.
Called home, said it, made arrangements to go to the funeral. They took the chains off of me back in my cell. I dropped to my knees and I promised not to ever drink again, because my mom died from abuse from alcohol and over-the-counter medications like Tylenol and the sleep aids and stuff like that. Because they're really bad on your liver.
Yeah.
And I promised I wouldn't drink again. Now, that didn't just because I promised I wasn't going to drink, that didn't take it all away from me then. I was going through withdrawals anyway. I'd wake up in the middle of the night, tear the cell apart, and know there was a half a pint of vodka in there. You know, it wasn't taken from it. But then one day I built a hatred in it, because I realized that's the enemy. That's what wants to take everything away from me. It took my family. It took my money. It's taken everything from me. You know, I'm here today because of the glory of the Almighty. He's seen something better in me, and he knows that I can get out there, and maybe I can help people through my story overcome their addictions and overcome their demons. I've been paralyzed twice, Billy. And I went to Japan and New Guinea and all that stuff after I came back from being paralyzed. A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know that either. Wow.
And yeah, 91. And then I was. Huh?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then, no. So I was injured in 91 working one night in Roanoke, Virginia with Gang and Kevin Sullivan. Swanick told me the surgery was going to cost me $27,000. I told WCW. They sent me papers signed by Magnum and my dad that my services were no longer needed. The doctor out in LA took my case. He worked on me every day without surgery, never charged me a dime. He got me on my feet. I was in California when the Northridge earthquake hit, and I re-injured myself knocking doors down. Because you do what you got to do in an emergency. I re-injured myself. Oh, gosh. And Schaffner worked on me another 6 months. And then I went to Atlanta to visit my dad, run into Charlie Norris again. And we started working out, and he got me back in the ring.
Let me ask you. So you did all this. Okay, so with everything you've done, obviously, you know, obviously that's an amazing story because obviously. Yeah, I mean, the Lord has been with you, you know, and this is pretty amazing.
Yes, he has.
I personally have never met you until CAC, and of course I knew who you were and whatnot, and I just never met you. And then once I met you at CAC, I instantly loved being around you. You're the life of the party. You're awesome. You're fun. We had a great time at CAC. And the thing is, I think, you know, we'll get through our interview with other stuff when it comes to not just. And this is not just a wrestling podcast, everybody. This is obviously lessons in life and trials and tribulations. And Sam has a lot of trials and tribulations and success when it comes to everything. I mean, I wanted to talk about, I mean, obviously you started off earlier in your career and you were, according to, again, I don't know everything about your, obviously your legacy. And this is why I have you on here for you to maybe correct a couple things if I'm wrong about it. But, I mean, early in your career, you were billed as a prodigy of Dusty Rhodes and Magnum T.I. So I can only imagine in Mid-Atlantic. And I had to imagine that's big shoes to fill, being even put in that category.
Oh, well, yeah, well, let me tell you, you know, after my surgery and everything, it took me a whole year to get my weight back. And when I went to go break in, my dad didn't really want me in the business. You know, so he wasn't going to help me with Watts or anything like that. So I left home, and Dusty started me out, and Dusty changed my name to Sam Houston.
Okay.
And I worked Florida. I worked in Florida for 3 months for Eddie Graham and Dusty, and wow, what a great crew and what a great time. And you know, I was just blessed. I was able to work every night. You know, it's like the guys today, you know. You get your creative, constructive criticism after your match, but it's 2 weeks before you can do it again because you don't have a match for 2 weeks. This way, you know, we were working on our craft every night. You know, so we were really blessed back at that time. And I was blessed because I had guys like Nelson Royal and Johnny Weaver and all these guys that I worked with, man. They were awesome dudes. They were, you know, wrestling legends themselves. I mean, they were awesome. And those were the brains I was picking every night. Well, when I came up to the Carolinas first, and I was dying. Crockett had like 5 bookers. Well, Dusty knew I knew the business from the office end as well. So Dusty would fly up to Charlotte. I'd pick him up at the airport. If I was working the towns, I was working. If not, I was driving him. And getting paid. And I was telling him, I was giving him the lowdown on everything, telling him, you know, because you had 5 bookers.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't stooging anybody out. I wasn't stooging anybody out or talking about anybody's drinking or drugging or nothing like that. It was all just business. But because he knew that I came up around Watts and my dad, and he knew that I knew what he was looking for.
Yeah.
So then Dusty came up. Yeah, then Dusty came up. And then, Dusty came up. Wyndham, the Rotundo, everything. And then all of a sudden, Rotundo and Wyndham left. That was a hard night. I was me and Dusty were together that night. And what a night. Whew, Wild Turkey. And we peed all over Jimmy Crockett's Mercedes that night. But then what was bad was... Jim Crockett gave Dusty the Mercedes the next day, and I had to go pick it up and go get it washed. That was one of Dusty's perks. That's a whole nother story. It's a great one, though. So Dusty wanted to know who was ready to from Watts' territory that could come in, and he'd already had Magnum down in Florida, and my dad had worked with Magnum and brought Magnum a long way and took him from being a preliminary guy to a main eventer. So Magnum was able to come in and fill those shoes.
Well,
and then the thing
happened
with me with this getting opened up by Tully and the 27 stitches above my eye. And then all of a sudden, when that happened, the next week the house went from $6,000. They put me in the main event with Dusty and stuff, Dusty and Magnum. The house went from $6,000 to $18,000. And the whole territory just started popping. And then they broke my arm, beat me up in the parking lot.
Yeah, that was with the horsemen, right? When you guys
So if you ever see me, you know, saying the original
was the best, it's because I've been in the ring with them. They beat the snot out of me.
Oh, yeah. I read the story on everything about that. That was huge times. I mean, I mean, huge as in, like you said, the way you guys drew, built the house up. I mean, that was definitely a story there. You know what I mean?
It wasn't the next sideshow. You wasn't standing in line to see the next sideshow or freak show. You were there for legitimate issues. You know, you were hooked in. Your teeth were sunk in. You know.
Yeah.
The talent, and you know, I walk in, and I hate this. I really do, Billy. I don't know if y'all know this or not, but when I go in that big dressing room in Vegas, you know, it's great to see a lot of people, but just once I'd like to see, like, five guys dressed up as wrestlers instead of characters. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
they're
sure.
not wrestlers
yeah.
anymore. I want to just slap the snot out of somebody. And tell them to be themselves, and then let the character build and find out
yeah,
who you are. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And if you guys are listening, every year we have a thing. We do the Call for Alley Club reunion, where a bunch of wrestlers from past, present, and future, we all get together and have a good time and honor a lot of people. And definitely, I'm honored enough.
If I'm there this year, I want a match. I'm gonna hold you to it. I want a match, not a battle royal. I do want to be in the battle royal because I can go smack everybody once or twice and jump on out of there. I ain't trying to be
and get out of there, right?
You know, just smack them around a little bit, because then they're gonna come to you and say, "Hey, I want to wrestle Houston next." You know, and that'll give me another booking. So if I just smack them around, and get out of there, save myself. And then save myself
no,
for the
awesome.
Match against. Yeah, just save my match. I want to get Cahagas some more. You know? Do you know the last
know,
time
please.
In the battle royal, dude?
Uh-huh.
We measured it. I threw him 22 feet from the ring. He flew 20 when I threw it. I threw him over the top rope in that battle royal. 22 feet is how far he flew before his ass hit the ground.
Damn.
We measured up.
Cahagas?
Oh, yeah. That was Cahagas, That was to get back at him from the year before, kicking me in the head. Boy,
he kicks and he slaps. And I would tell you, he chops. The one thing about Cahagas is funny because, like, I love Cahagas, man. He's such a cool guy, such a great character, such a great gimmick. He's a wrestler. Like, and you know what? You can't.
Yeah, that's what you want.
If you come into a match with Cahagas and you're not ready and you don't step up, he'll let you know that you didn't step up to the test, so to speak, you know. And I know every year I put him with guys, you know, to kind of – actually, I do it so they can learn, you know. I mean, hey, this is one of those opportunities.
Yeah.
You're going to have to step
no,
up.
No, you
and,
don't. You don't.
And,
you, do it cause
you, know?
You do it because you like to see it.
Oh, yeah, and that too. You know, I definitely do. But the thing is I know he's so good that, like, they're either going to learn.
Oh
from
yeah,
it
he'll take care
not,
of it.
You know exactly,
yeah.
And so I've watched every year that I see him work. I watch when he, you know, when he works somebody, and I notice who learns from it and who basically gets consumed by it and kind of forgets how to be a wrestler. You know, and that's that's on them. That's not on me, man. I can only do so much. I don't want to wrestle him. You know, I it's not that
oh,
I don't
I
want
just,
to.
See,
I just, so, you know, I, not that I don't.
I know exactly.
I
know what
him,
you're saying. Yeah,
but like he's one of those guys where I know he loves the business just like yourself, and he wants to be involved as much as he can. He wants to work as many times as he can, like yourself, and he'll come out a day early, 2 days early, just to make sure he's. You know, ready to make sure we can get him on one of those shows, you know, because he wants to give back to the wrestling community while he's out there, you know, and same with you.
Yeah.
And if you guys are listening,
well, let me tell you,
Alley Club
let me
is the place.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It is, man. I have a blast out there. Oh, do you know, I'm the only one in Cauliflower Alley Club history. Okay. First of all, let me tell you like this. I got in that bowling tournament thing. And I'm really not a bowler. So anyway, they wouldn't let me wear my boots. Okay, so I had the lowest ever bowling score ever in Cauliflower Alley history. But I'm also
out of anybody that's ever bowled there. I'm also the only bowler that has ever knocked down pins two lanes over. So I do have that to my credit. You know,
well,
I've got
you know
a lot of things to my credit.
Well, let me say strutting, you have for your credit, the strut off. Like, so if you guys have never been to our, you're missing a lot of stuff at the CAC, at the reunion, because not only, like me and a few friends, when we were drinking, we set up this strut off. We call it the Larry Sweeney, Jackie Fargo, Open Invitational, Tag Team, Texarkana strut off, something like that. We always mix the words up. We try to make it as long as possible, but it started out as a couple guys in a bar, two teams with some friends inside the bar, ends up being a huge phenomenon. And now Sam Houston and I believe your partner was Levi Shapiro is actually one of our, I think you guys were the last, no, you guys were the time before that. You guys were our champions
before.
For the strut off. And if you guys haven't seen it, he was able to win the strut by really going over the top, so to speak, and taking his shirt off and having pasties on his chest, on his nipples. And
hey,
let me just tell you, it's the funny scissors.
Well, I didn't know if there were going to be children in the area or not, nothing like that. So I wanted to make sure I was covered. You know, I didn't want any nudity involved. Yeah. So anyway, and it did get a big pop. So,
yep.
You know, and with the boots I was wearing it. Now I did strut and I did strut well, but with the boots that I was wearing and the pasties, it wouldn't matter if I'd have just stood there. I'd have won.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. And as one of the judges, you know, I mean, it definitely, and that's, what stood, you know, made you stand out obviously. And that's what we were looking for, is somebody, you know, a character.
Well,
I really enjoy
because I don't feel like Wayne Newton. I want to like be there and say hey to you and stuff and talk with you. Don't be scared of me or nothing like that. You've been supporting, you know, wrestling or something all your life. Well, if you got the opportunity and I'm right there, might as well say hello. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
And
that's what the CAC is about, too, you know?
Yeah, it's about friendship and being able to get together and share things. Do you know, the CACs, I went up, and this is before Mr. Byer had passed and stuff like that. It was the first one I went to, and he was sitting there. And I walked up to him, and I went to say, and he knew right who I was, even at his age and stuff. He knew who I was. We had worked together in Toronto when I was just breaking in, going to Mid-Atlantic. Johnny Weaver was the booker for Canada. So he took me in 84 up to Toronto, and I met some great people up there, my friend Debs, and we've been friends for like 35 years and stuff. Got some other friends, Missy, that's listening right now. She's up in Virginia. Love her to death. And her friend Cheryl. Oh, I mean, there was camaraderie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was talking to
Dick
Byers, you know, we started talking, and he said, is that the first time I met you? And I said, no. I said, I believe that in Maine, and he remembered the story, Dick Byer wrestled a dead alligator one night. Wow. Well, at the time there were three guys that had the wrestling bear, you know, and they went around the country. Well, Tuffy Truesdell was one of the guys, and he saw down in Florida when he was down there, the Seminole Indian alligator wrestling. So he figured, you know, he's a gimmick thing anyway. He gets some alligator and wrestle, you know. So, you know, he watches him. He gets smartened up how to wrestle the alligators and stuff. So, well, Tuffy Truesdell was booked in Vancouver with the alligator, and he had the alligator and the bear with him. So he's got to drive from Vancouver all the way to Maine, and it's wintertime, and the alligator was in the steel box, and it takes 3 days. Alligator froze to death in the box. But they put my dad and my Uncle Luke on the back of the box, so they carried the six guys, carried out like the steel box, like pallbearers. They opened the slide, the door on the front. My dad and my Uncle Luke Brown, his partner, dad was 7 foot. Luke was about 6'9". They were raising their hands up. you know, lift the back end of the box up in the air. The alligator slides out. Dick Byer jumps on the alligator's back, and he's wrestling around with it, wiggling its arms and legs, gets in front of it, opens its mouth, closes its mouth, and everything, and scurries it back in the box after he pinned it. Yeah. So I was there for that night.
He was not even alive. That's the best part about it, right?
No. What happened was, Tuffy Truesdale, they're in the dressing room, and Tuffy goes out to check on the gator, and he comes back, and he says, the gator's dead. He tells the boys that. The promoter walks in, and they go, the gator's dead, and this guy's freaking out because he's going to have to give all the money back. So they all sit down and figure out. If Dick jumps on the alligator right when it comes out of the box, nobody will know it's dead. So I was there the night he wrestled a dead alligator.
One of our fans that was commenting on our when I posted, I don't know, maybe you could tell me what this, I kind of know what it means, but just in case, he said Arn Armstrong calls him the human broomstick, Sam Houston.
You know, oh, Arn Anderson did that. Yeah. Arn Anderson called me a broomstick.
Yeah.
The cool thing is, Arn Armstrong.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's got
it wrong.
I thought
that's what he meant. I thought he meant Arn Anderson, too. But I said, well, what does this mean? Now it makes more sense. Okay.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. You know. Hey, I don't know. I mean, you know, you pick at guys and stuff like that. So that's just something that Arn used to call. Bart used to say I had buggy whip arms and, you know, this, that, and the other. But you know what's funny is I can outwork just about all of them. I can work around any of them. I've had the, a lot of them, I've had the greatest matches in their career. And if you look on most of those guys and stuff like that, the Road Warriors or the Horsemen or this one or that one or the other one, I'm on their highlight reels. You know what I mean? So it doesn't
but you definitely are one of the best. I think, having you at CEC was amazing. If you, again, I always put over on these podcasts, Sam, so, you know, I always put over the CAC just because I think a lot of people that don't go or never go, I think they're really missing out on opportunities.
One time
we had the ring set up. We do a show Sunday night, Monday night. So the ring set up all day Monday with nothing to do. Why not take advantage of the ring being there? And you came in and said, hey, I want to do like a little seminar. You technically didn't even charge. You basically, they can tip you, whatever they want to do. But I want to get in the ring with some of these youngsters, even guys who've been around a long time, and see, you know, I mean, you pass on the knowledge. And so I appreciate that. And I think we're going
to
try to do that a little bit more often.
I want to do it again.
For sure. Yeah, no. And I think, we'll try to advertise it this next time. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in September. I know that's been pushed back because all this COVID stuff. So I know they're on this, and I have a feeling it's not going to happen, but I'm hoping it does just because it's kind of like a break from reality, I think, for a lot of people, especially myself.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, and you never know who's not going to be there the next year. And that's the reason it's like so, important to me to be there every year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let me tell you something, Billy.
Sure.
You know, during my prison stuff and everything, one of the best compliments I ever got before in my life, and I didn't understand it. You know, and like I said, I did a lot of time studying and thinking and working on myself, you know, because I wanted to come out a better man, and I have. Anyway, while I was locked up in there, I had a big fight one night against three guys that ripped off all my things. I told my Bible study guys, don't get involved. Just make sure nobody stabs me or hits me in the back of the head with a lock. And I went against three guys to get my things back. The warden found out who I was after I whooped him. Got my things back. Found out who I was, and he did me the biggest favor in the world. He was a wrestling fan, and he sent me to a Class A trustee camp, the only one in the state, to where you could go outside the fence and work. One of the best compliments I ever got in my life, I was coming back from the ring in Philadelphia, and Paul Ellering stopped me when I was walking up on the stage. And he said, Sam, he goes, I just love watching your matches. And I looked at him, I was like, well, thanks, you know. And I said, I'm glad you like it. And he said, you always go that one step further. You know, and I used to go one step further with everything in my life because this just wasn't good enough. I got to see what I got left in me. Well, wrestling has always been like that. After I was paralyzed, I rested on my laurels. I didn't try as hard as I, you know, because I was good enough. I could go out there and blow everybody away and not even try, you know.
Yeah,
and I rested
yeah,
on those
sure.
laurels, and I didn't really reach for the moon. I didn't reach for the stars. I just did it half-assed. And in prison, I realized to myself, and that's why I go out there and do so hard in Vegas and want to be the best I can, is because I feel like I robbed the people of what the gifts that the Almighty gave me, the gifts that I possess. You know, when I get in the ring, it's different for me than it is for everybody else. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I have a connection with the people. You know,
oh, you do
I don't
for
know.
Sure.
It's just, but okay. Today's day and age. Now, when I was a kid growing up, I had guys in the dressing room putting me in holds and stuff like that. You don't have that nowadays. And I get there.
No.
These are people. These are guys in the dressing room. They're there to reach for their dreams. They dreamed of being in that ring. They dreamed of being a wrestler. But they're not putting the work into it to be it. You know? When I broke in, you had to be
for
able
sure.
to do, you know, 1,500 squats, 500 push-ups, and then you get in the ring and shoot. You know, George Weingraf stretched
yeah.
me all over the place, but he couldn't put me all the way down. You know,
and I think
well, guys don't
I think
have
that's
that
a lot
nowadays.
Of, exactly.
Oh,
I was
you got $2,000? I'm
going
to teach you an arm drag.
You know, that's what they get
yeah.
now. I just posted a thing on Facebook today. I think there's some independent guy. They're bleeding all over the backs and everything. And the one guy picks the other guy up, and you know the other guy had set the table up, and the whole nine yards. He just dropped him on the floor on his head.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, and he's like, oh yeah, I've seen it. They're supposed to drop him on like some kind of table gimmick, and he dropped right
table
in front of him.
Yeah.
But I tell you one thing,
yeah.
they probably don't know headlock, you know, but they could try
no,
to do something like
no.
that, you know.
You know, and people
thing.
Ask me, what's the biggest difference between, you know, my day and today? Well, back in my day, when you went to the wrestling matches, you knew what you were going to see. You knew you were paying to see wrestling. You were going to see Ole Anderson. You were going to see, you know, Ric Flair. You were going to see Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard. You were going to see wrestlers. Now what are you coming to see? The clown show. You know, here come
yeah,
the acrobats.
Yeah.
Boom, bada, boom, bada, boom, bada, boom, bada, boom. Nothing against those guys, but, you know, if you're trying to keep it real and convince people and stuff like that, then you got to keep it real. You know, you can't sit there. I sit there and go, wow, they're dancing really nicely, you know?
Yeah.
You
well,
know,
you know what?
I mean,
I'm on your page. I'm with you on
you
that
know?
One. The thing is, I notice is like, now today's wrestling, like I said, I'm not knocking them. Well, I mean they're amazing athletes. I just think, you know, when you watch them, like you said, dancing or like jump. I mean they don't like get the crowd into it. I mean they don't involve
no,
the
no,
crowd.
No, no, it's all TV spots. It's all for the next boom.
In the crowd. Exactly.
Yeah, there's
invest
never
in the
yeah.
crowd. Yeah.
You know,
so
when somebody's
no,
got your arm and they got you down and they got your arm, it was mm-hmm. like you know always you know go Sam go. So Sam goes,
yeah,
and the people
yeah.
get louder and louder and louder, and you don't believe how much that pumps you up. And then you have that big
oh,
build up and that pop. You know,
I
but people
imagine,
don't people
I mean,
don't get that.
I feel bad right now. I know why WWE or AEW and all that or Impact Wrestling they're performing in front of really no audience. And now they're starting to throw in like you know other wrestlers in the audience just to kind of do it because I know they have to do it for their sponsors and whatnot. But I feel bad because like. You can feel the atmosphere is not there compared to like a real audience, a real live audience. And like you said, you feed off your audience. And that's when I teach in my guys that, you know, where I'm at wrestling and whatnot, I was trained by a guy named Jesse Hernandez and Bill Anderson and
Jesse.
Guys like that. And yeah,
I know
yeah. And they're old school.
Good guy.
And I've always been trained old school. And so I was like, I tell my guys, I said, look, if what you see on TV is not what it's supposed to look like. I said, look,
yeah,
amazing
no.
athletes, great moves, but I said they're not invested into the crowd, and I always preach it. And my guys, it's funny because they see it, but then when somebody like yourself comes on our podcast, or when I have somebody you know, at our gym helping out, they start seeing it, you know. You know how it is. It's like I tell them all day long, and they say, oh, yeah. But then once somebody like yourself comes in and they see it, they're like, oh, man, I didn't know that. You knew that. You just didn't want to see
it. Yeah, you just weren't applying it, you know, because everybody and I hate to say it like this, but, Billy, I've noticed a lot of stuff, man. People are going to try to do things the way people want to do them. And they're never satisfied, but what they are satisfied is, oh, they've done just enough. You know what I mean? It's not about giving that one step further. Okay, well, this is, you know, do.
Yeah.
That's not how you got to be. You got to be focused, and you got to know what you want. If this is your dream, the best thing I can do, because I'm really good at what I do, is to better you at your craft. And if it takes me a little bit of time to give you something that you will use for years, and then you can, you know, later on teach somebody else. But, you know, if it isn't real and if you ain't feeling it, you need to hang the boots up. If you're just out there if you're just out there to have your little 15 minutes and wear shiny underwear or something like that, you know, for your own ego, get out, you know, because you're serving no purpose, you know.
You said you hang up your boots. Nowadays, they don't even wear boots. And that's a funny thing.
Oh, I know,
always taught, man, you have to have boots. If you're a wrestler, you got to have boots.
Well,
and so that's the first thing when I start training.
Yeah. There's not any – I'm talking right now to a boot company. You know, I wear pretty stylish boots. I got a pair that's on eBay right now. I think the price just dropped they're 30 years old, 35 years old. The price just dropped from $12,000. They're asking $10,500 for them now. But anyway, they've been in a museum for 30 years. That's why I guess they've
done
so much. I don't know. Anyway, but I'm talking to a bootmaker now because everybody likes my wrestling boots, but nobody can get some made. And I've seen guys so I've been talking to this bootmaker about a line of boots. They're very interested in helping me out and coming out with a line of Sam Houston boots, you know, so we'll be able to do something as far as work boots, street boots, wrestling boots. I'll see what we can do about getting some last made and make lace up wrestling boots, you know.
Yeah, see, that'd be
cool. And market them. Yeah, but you know, make them out of good quality leather. I don't want these. You know, I look at some of these stuff now, and really, it looks like it should be in a costume shop.
Oh,
you know, not athletic
gear,
not hanging with athletic gear. You know, not hanging with athletic gear. You know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So you know? How was it like? Back to the wrestling, real quick. You were in the very first Royal Rumble, WWF Royal Rumble at the time, and you were actually in that matchup for a long time. I actually watched the other night just to kind of check up on you know, my history with yourself, and you were also featured in WrestleMania 4 in the Battle Royal there. So how was it like look how big WWE, WWF, whatever it is now. What was it like now you're looking back at the history of wrestling and whatnot. What was it like knowing that you were in the very first Royal Rumble matchup, which is now, you know, one of the top pay-per-views of all time is the Royal Rumble every
year.
What's
really cool is, what's really cool, dude, is I was there. I was in it, and I'm still kicking. I'm still moving. Every time, though, I see myself flying across the air and landing on the floor because I splattered that concrete hard, and that was before they had those big mats.
Yeah.
I sit there and my body hurts when I hit and I can just be watching it, but those pains creep back. No, but it's a great accomplishment, man. I was there and I'm still kicking and I'm still moving and I'm still moving forward, still trying to help people, you know. Billy, I told you I was paralyzed twice. I got when I was down in Florida, I fell for this one promoter, guy's name was Dave Nelson. Really shafted me over, left me stranded down there the whole nine yards. I moved in with a girl. Her name is Cherie Perez. She had broken her spinal column. She had severed it in a snowboarding accident. you know, I went and I went to, for the interview and everything, and then I rented a room at her house for a few months. Well, within a couple of weeks, she was working out every day because I was encouraging her. You know, she had tried rehab for 6 years and she got no benefit. So she sat in her chair for like 2 years. Then a couple of weeks after I was moving in, she was putting her braces on, her leg braces on, and she was working out every day. You know, she can walk 2 hours a day now. She gets on a surfboard with a seat welded behind it, gets pulled by a speedboat there in Orlando and does all them flippy-doos and all those kinds of things. She rode a jet ski for the first time in 2 years, a year ago last August.
Wow. And so, you know, and that's amazing because, like, and I think, and again, you're always, like I said, I only met you, you know, not recently, but, you know, within a few years ago with GAC, and man, you were always even walking around, having a good time with everybody. You were always there to help somebody, like if they wanted it, you know, or if they were, you know, needing it. And I think that kind of, that just that story right there, you said that earlier before we got one on air, you were talking about that story and we weren't even on air yet. You're still talking about that story. And that's one thing that people nowadays, you know, they don't really get the whole idea of, you know, asking people for advice. I was going to say, like, for example, yourself, a friend of mine, he is from California. And even though he's kind of considered the newer age wrestler, he's definitely very, very old school, so to speak. He was trained by Shawn Michaels. His name is Brian Kendrick. He was on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast, which is some of you've been in the ring with, Ric Flair, Stone Cold. I mean, you've been in the ring with all these guys that people look up to and really made them look good because, I mean, you were an amazing wrestler and still are, actually. I know you can go toe-to-toe with many people even today because you know how to work. You know, I've been teaching my guys in the ring just because, even though they don't do it as often anymore, you know, how to walk and talk or call on the fly, you know, and I've been teaching them a lot, trying to learn that style. I said, because you never know when you'll need it, even though nowadays it's not as often that you see that style. But back to the Brian Kendrick thing real quick, is he was on a podcast talking about how he's blown away by today's wrestlers. And I'm not knocking him. It's just, it's the truth. And I'm not worried about getting a spot because I'm, you know, I only wrestle every once in a while. I'm almost end of my career at this point, about 20 years in, which, you know, is good in my, for my sense because I'm more of a promoter side. But Brian was saying, hey, guys, you know, what he's blown away by is the fact that a lot of these wrestlers, they'll have their matches and then they'll leave and go to the hotel. They won't sit there and watch other people's matches and ask questions from guys that are watching their matches or maybe ask someone to watch their match and give them some.
No, because they're all prima donnas. Yeah, they're all prima donnas. They're all superstars. They all know everything. You know, I walked in a dressing room in Georgia that, oh gosh, it was for, what got me back in the ring was I was at the matches with a disabled vet and Jamie Morris. This is like right when I came out to Vegas and all that, the first part. Yeah, when I lost everything in the floods. Anyway, so I'm at Southern Fried Wrestler with Jamie Morris. And the only person that knew me was the old referee, Charlie Smith. And he was selling old magazines over here at the table. So I was sitting over by the front door with Jamie, sitting there watching the matches. And the kid in the, I guess, second match, the tag match, took a bad bump over the top rope and came down on the corner of the ring. And I knew where he hit, you know, that was the kidney shot. And I knew the way it sounded, you know how it sounds and you know, it ain't right. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, the fans your listeners probably won't, but so I knew something wasn't right. So Jamie had been trying to set up my, social media stuff. Cause I'm not computer literate, man. So I throw him my wallet. I throw him my wallet and my phone. And I take off running to the ring. Nobody knows who I am except for Charlie Smith. So I'm sitting down there and I'm looking at this kid. And, you know, and I see he's got, you know, a little bit of blood in his mouth. So I start hollering at a couple of the guys at the standing at the dressing room door. And they're looking at me, you know, just looking at me. So I hollered again. And this time it was more of a growl. And I told him, you know, get him. Well, I turned back around and the referee's looking at me. He's totally lost. you know, he don't know what to do. So I'm figuring, okay, this guy's in the fizz, isn't he? You know?
And yeah, yeah.
Now they don't know what to do. So I took my watch off. I said, I hollered, I got this, threw the watch to the timekeeper, jerked my shirt off, jumped up on the ring apron, told the guy to tag me in. He did. And I beat the snot out of everybody and bulldogged everybody. Then I got on the microphone, told the people who I was, who I stood for, who, what I knelt for, and the people went nuts. And then another promoter called me from Shelby 2 nights later, and I did that, you know. But I was getting ready to say, you know, you're talking about great matches and everything. One of the biggest things, Barry Darso was Crusher Cruz Jeff and Crusher Darso, and what else was he? He was Smash. He was the Blacktop
Bully.
Well,
Repo Man. Repo Man, too,
right? Repo Man. Yeah, all that stuff. Anyway, my matches, I wrestled them. I was in the ring a couple of times when he was Demolition, I think, in Battle Royals and stuff. But, you know, we had a lot of matches, Starrcade, TBS. We had a lot of matches over the Mid-Atlantic area all over the place. And my very first CAC, he came over to me. And we're in that big banquet room. And he said, Sam, he said, all of the greatest matches in my career were with you. You know, wow, that was a what a feather to put in your cap, you know? Kurt Hennig wrote, the three greatest matches in his career were Bret Hart, Nick Bockwinkel, and Sam Houston. You know?
Oh, and that's amazing. I mean, those are things that you know, no one could take from you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what
happens
with you or, you know, yourself or whatever. Like you said, you were in prison, you know, and this and that. It doesn't matter what you've done in life or whatever. But people can't take stuff like that from you. And that's, you know, like,
no,
example,
these
myself,
are all accomplishments.
Yeah.
These are all
yeah.
accomplishments that I can hang on the wall. They don't define the person I am in my heart, and that's the one I want you to meet now. You know, but I'm going to still keep accomplishing things, and I'm still going to keep adding things to that wall. You know, I opened up for The Who at the world's biggest party in the state of Texas at the Houston Astrodome and Reunion Arena for Texas Stadium. The Who, Pete Townsend and The Who. I wrestled before they came on and did their concert. Wow, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, and that's another example of something, you know, you can take with you that they can't take away. And you know what, you mentioned you know, what you're doing now or whatever. You were talking before we went on about a TV show. Do you want to let people know, you know, what's going on with you? Maybe whatever you're able to talk about when it comes to that show.
Yeah, I just hooked up. Well, when this virus and everything happened, I'm on parole in Louisiana. I came up here I got my travel papers to came up here to North Carolina to fly out to Ohio to do an event. And I was going to spend a week in North Carolina and discuss doing a television show called Fulfilling the Needs, to where we go out and kind of like a Habitat for Humanity thing, but something to where I can share, you know, what I want to share about my almighty with you. Because I did a lot of studying about the word and everything else. And really, if I want people to get saved. I want them to follow the word. I want them to follow the Messiah. Because the biggest thing I can ever do for anybody is lead them to the Messiah and offer them everlasting life. That's the most important thing you could ever do for any man, woman, or child, is lead them to salvation. You know, and if I can help in any way, shape, or form, that's what I want to give you. That's what I want to give the listeners. I know I see, and I've had to work for free in prison, so it doesn't matter. But if I see somebody that needs a ramp built or a bathroom or something like that needs to be taken care of, and they're disabled or they're on a fixed income and they ain't got it to do it or something like that, well, we're going to get it done somehow. You know, I've been getting donations, not donations, I've been getting material donated to fix these two disabled ladies' houses, one in Marshville and one in Wingate, North Carolina. Oh, gosh. You know, they don't have money to spend on everything, but I've gotten one of them. I put a foyer in. I did two bathrooms, completely rebuilt them. You know, and this was, I think, all that's come out of her pocket was $40 for everything. But her Easy Lift chair works now. She, you know, do a lot of things to help people. And that's what fulfilling the needs, that's what the television show is going to be about. And we'll have our, we're on Patreon under Michael Sam Houston for your listeners if they want to check me out on Patreon, if they're familiar with that. If not, if you want to do donations, you can do donations to Fulfilling the Needs. You go to WrestlingLegends2020@gmail.com, and you can do a donation through PayPal. Anybody that does any donations or anything, whatever merchandise that we have available, we'll get out and make sure.
Yeah.
Because I'm not asking you. I'm just saying I need help to help other people. And right now I'm not in a financial position to do it, but I will. You know, but
and I appreciate you telling us that, because I mean, that's, I want people to hear that. And, you know, with everybody, I mean, especially with the COVID thing going on, the coronavirus, I mean, that just put a damper on everybody's, things they were trying to get accomplished, like yourself. You know, I know that hasn't helped at all. So hopefully, people are listening and they are able to, you know, donate and help you help other people in need. And myself, you know, I have a role, weakness, and it's not even a weakness. I mean, I have a real part of my heart that I my grandmother lost her legs when she was, for many years. She and they told her she only live a hand, like maybe 5 years, I think it was, but she ended up, you know, living another 20 something years after they told her that, 25 years. And I took care of her, you know, I did a lot for her and anything she needed. So I have when I see, like you said, you helping the disabled ladies and that, you don't do that because you're trying to get, get something out of it. You're doing it from the kindness of your heart. And that's kind of like, I see that happen, you know, with me. You know, I do that all the time. I see something, I like to help someone with the kindness of my heart. You know, I mean, whether it's a
lady, it's kind of like this,
so giving it back, in other words.
Yeah. Okay. When I worked offshore, when I worked through prison and everything, got into work release, I got me a job offshore. I went from being a scaffold helper to a scaffold supervisor faster than anybody in the history of the Gulf, or Gulf South history is what I've been told. Anyway, and the reason why I did that is because of a fellow by the name of Mark Compton knew the position that I was in, and he knew he could keep me out there, that I would much rather be offshore than on land, because if I'm on land, I'm in jail. So he kept me out there. I was only on land 5 weeks out of that whole last year. So, you know, but you know, he blessed me like that. So when you're offshore and you're on a platform and everything around you can kill you or something like that, there's chances of death just everywhere you turn. You're on a Roman candle out there, for goodness sakes, you know?
But, yeah.
You know, it's a fine if a water bottle goes in the ring, $5,000, or this, that, or if you throw a cigarette butt in the water, you know, you can get hit. So you keep the platform clean. Well, that's what, if I was walking by something and something needs to be done, there's only 9 of us on here. Am I going to keep walking by it, or am I going to sit there and fix it? You know, it's kind of like that simple.
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah,
I'm not going to. Why burden the next guy? You're right there. Fix it. You know, there's something on the ground.
Like
bend over, pick it up.
A piece of trash. Yeah, well, it's one of, you know, like same thing. Like almost, you know, you see a piece of trash. I mean, it's not going to pick itself up sometimes, you know. And that's just the nature of our you know, of the human being, you know, or the, you know, whatnot. Let me ask you a question.
Nah, I'll get it later.
I do on our shows. I'll do this.
Okay.
I do this on my shows, and I didn't even prep it with you because I don't need to with you because you are one of those people. Let me just show you the clipper fast. It's called
Rib for Your Pleasure,
and it's a pretty cool concept we do on our show. I think as a wrestler myself, and you obviously being a legend yourself as well. It's a section of our show we call the Ribbed for Your Pleasure, which is your favorite rib or favorite rib that's been pulled on you or you pulled on somebody else that you're obviously able to talk about because, you know, there's still some people out there that don't know what happened and how that happened. So You know, so okay. Can you let the audience listen to what maybe is one of your favorite ribs of all time that maybe you pulled on somebody or you pulled on – that they pulled on you, you know, because I know you have a lot.
Okay. Y'all remember Nikolai Volkov. First of all, I love you, Nikolai. Rest in peace. Oh, and I hope a lot of people enjoy this, and you bring joy and pleasure to us all one more time, sir. Anyway, I've known Nikolai since he was, I think he was Beppo. He was one of the Mongols. I don't remember if he was Beppo or Gito. Him and Bill Eady. So anyway, later on he was Nikolai Volkov. Well, I knew him. And when I got to Vince, up there working for Vince and stuff, you know, we were flying every day and everything. Well, Nikolai, we were flying to Boston, and Nikolai and I were on the same plane. Well, I was talking to this stewardess, because the flight attendants, you know, we're wrestlers, we stand out. And everybody, oh, you look like Richie Sambora, or you look like this one or that one, you know. I was like, like Sam Houston. anyway, so I'm talking to this stewardess or something. I think I was getting a soda or something. And Nikolai comes up, and he goes, hello, Sam. I was like, hey, Nikolai. And he looks at her, and he goes, let me show you this magic trick. So he's got these little sponge balls in his hand. You know, and he's wadding them up. And he's going through this whole routine where they're putting the balls in their hand, then taking them out and putting, you know, more. And so he comes down to the end and he says, okay, how many balls do you have in your hand? And she says, two. And she opens up her hand and she's got five. So then he tells her he's going to show her how to do the trick, but he's going to do it to me so she can see. So he goes through, and I notice he's not doing the same spiel when he's going through the number of balls and the whole nine yards. And then he said, what's on your mind? And I opened my hand up, and it wasn't a sponge balls. It was a sponge penis and two balls in my hand. And I said, oh, I was mad.
Now, do you have any podcast? I mean, do you have any ribs that you pulled on somebody you could talk about?
Oh yeah, well I'm getting ready to tell you how the rest of this goes.
Okay. I was gonna say. Okay.
you know me, Billy. You know that's not gonna fly.
I was just gonna say that. That's why I was like, you know, you kind of paused.
Yeah.
And like, really?
Yeah.
That's it.
So anyway, now me, Jake, and Duggan, when we were on the road, we would all travel together because, you know, we partook in the same things. So me, Jake, and Duggan were in Boston Gardens. We were in the dressing room. You know, they had the TV cameras because they used to do the in-house tapings. So I walk out of the dressing room. And I see Nikolai down the hallway, and he's looking out the curtains into the arena because he's the next match. And I see him looking like that. I walk back in the dressing room, and I grab me a piece of toilet paper about 3 feet long. And then I grab me a Band-Aid. So I open the Band-Aid up and hook it to the toilet paper on one side. I got it all put in my hand. As I walk down the hall past Nikolai, I tap him on his waist right at his trunks and said, good luck out there, Nikolai. Nikolai turns around and he says, thanks, Sam. What I had done was I put that 3 foot tail of toilet paper coming out the top of the trunks in the back. So the match gets over. Jim Powers goes to the ring. The referee's in the ring, and here comes Nikolai out to the ring carrying his big Russian flag, his big red jacket, the toilet paper. Well, Nikolai's used to when he walks out there, everybody yelling, USA, USA, or boo, or, you know, F you, whatever, cussing him out, whatever, you know. So he's used to that. Well, he's walking out to the ring, and he starts, when he gets like a quarter of the way to the ring, he starts noticing that the people in front of him are yelling USA and all that, but the people behind him are laughing. So he don't know why.
So he gets to the ring and climbs up on the apron. He gets to the ring and he goes around the ring with his Russian flag waving it around. And now everybody sees, 17,000 people see he's got toilet paper coming out the top of his tights. So the whole Coliseum, the whole Boston Gardens is dying laughing. And Nikolai's stomping around there. He won the microphone telling everybody to please stand for the Russian national anthem. Nikolai was a trooper. He didn't know, and he's sitting there, and he's, and he's singing away, and that toilet paper. Jim Powers is laying in the corner. He's on the corner. He's laughing so hard his sides were hurting. The referee was biting the top turnbuckle. Nikolai finishes singing. Howard Finkel is in tears. Nikolai's jumping around the ring trying to get the match started, and nobody was doing nothing. Finally, he hit the ropes twice, and the toilet paper come off.
Oh, man.
So he was able to settle down and have his match. So I walk in the dressing room, and Doug and Jake are sitting there, and they're looking at me. And Jake looks at me and says, "You did that." And I said, "Did what?" And Duggan said, "You're buying the beer for a month, or we're telling Nikolai what you did." And I was like, no, I decided to buy the beer for a month, and I was glad because that Saturday, Nikolai was at the airport, and I was at the airport too, and I was sitting at a different gate. He didn't know who did it. He didn't know it had been done yet. He stuck some quarters in the TV in that row of seats, you know, that have the TVs on them back then.
Yeah, yeah.
He sucks some quarters into that. He's going to watch the show. He sees the toilet paper. He wadded that whole row of chairs up in a little ball. I was so glad I'd made the decision to buy the beer. However, in 2006, now this is to let you know what kind of man I am. In 2006, at the WWF Legends thing in Dallas, Texas, I went to that, and I told Nikolai what I did, and he looked at me and he goes, "Ha, ha." He said, "You funny, Sam." And the reason I, because I wanted to fess up, I wanted him to know who got him. I wanted him to know why. And I also figured he's probably in his 70s by then, so I knew I could whip him or outrun him one.
Yeah. You know, that's hilarious, man. That's probably that's one of the funnier ones we've had on our show for sure, if not funniest. I, one of my midget wrestlers, I run a micro wrestling company, midget wrestling company as well, that, which is pretty much all, you know, all midget wrestling. And it's, you know, we'll do about 100 shows a year, you know, and that's a lot, you know, except not right now, of course. But one of our wrestlers has been around about 25 years. He's been wrestling as a little guy named Little Hank Dalton, and they called him Shorty. Anyway, he got me recently, and I'm only reason bringing it up is because it was a real small rib. We're at a bar. And we're hanging out, and next thing you know, I went to go sit down, and he pulled my chair out from underneath me in front of everybody, and I fell on the floor, you know. And all the beer came pouring down on me because my elbow hit the table, so it made the table spill, like, literally, like, six beers, all everybody's drinks on me. And I told him, I said, "I'm going to get you back, trust me." And that's been about, it's been a few months now since that happened, and I want to let him know that it will come one of these days, because I told him, you'll never know when it's coming, and this is one of those instances where you never know,
okay. And
you've given me some ideas. That's the good news, you know. So
best one to do is let him get drunk, pass out. When he passes out, get a Norelco razor and take one eyebrow off. Don't take both of them. Take only one. Because if you take both of them, people's going to look at them like, and they're trying to figure out what's wrong with them, but they can't figure it out. But if you take one, then they're going to see one's gone, and then they're going to go, "Aha, you've got had." Or write
they'll know that you
on
got
their forehead. Yeah, write stupid on their forehead with a magic marker and take them and drop them off at the convenience store. Everybody that looks at you smiles at you.
Yeah,
you bring sunshine to so many people's days.
Yeah, and you know the thing is I think a nice good old rib, you know, is a lot of people nowadays, they don't understand a nice old fashioned rib, you know, like you're talking about. Like now, I mean, obviously everybody's so like they're not invested in you know, they're making money at wrestling. They're on TV. That's amazing. But they don't the cult, you know,
they
the brotherhood.
They don't live it. Yeah, the culture,
yeah.
Everything's gone. I was talking with Wahoo's wife, Karen McDaniel, the other night. You know, and it ain't the same. I mean, we were rock stars, Jack. You know, we was riding across the sky on the edge of a lightning bolt, you know. That's Learjets, limousines, the whole nine yards. You know, I mean, we were making money back then. It's not like you drive 6 hours and you got to pay somebody $40 to work.
Something. Let me ask you, so we're going to be wrapping this up in a few minutes. I got a nephew, it's his birthday. We're going to end up going to do his birthday party in a few minutes. I wanted to ask a couple other questions and we'll wrap it up. But, hey, I would love to have you come back, man. I think you have another
–
I think, man, you could talk for hours and, I might have you come back and do it again, you know. I mean, I always like hearing stories like this. I think the listeners love hearing stories like this. And it kind of makes me appreciate where I came from, because I think a lot of kids nowadays, they don't understand the importance of being, being trained by or working the road, you know, hitting the pavement. I mean, they don't appreciate the paying the dues, you know, or setting up rings, breaking them down. They don't understand all the hard work that goes into pro wrestling. They just want to act like a pro wrestler, but not actually put in the time and energy. And I want to appreciate.
Yeah, they
want to
be the champion, not the carpenter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think a lot of the guys are missing. You know, I have ex students that tell me they're going to just pay their way through wrestling. I'm like, wow, that's not how you do it. And you're not going to ever appreciate. No, you're never going to appreciate what you have if you have to pay your way through it. You know what I mean? And I think that's your story. I think you've worked your ass off to get where you're at, no matter if it was trials or tribulations. And look what you're doing now. I mean, I know I talked to you about a year or two ago when we were talking. You were working on another TV project and stuff. But the thing is it's not something.
Well, it's the same one.
I like about you.
It's the same thing.
Oh, it's the
same
one. Okay,
same
cool.
Thing.
Even better.
Yeah, and it's coming to fruition. I've been working really hard on it.
You're doing it for yourself. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it to help other people, not just yourself. You know what I mean? So and I appreciate that. I'm sure many, many people appreciate that as well, you know?
Well, it's kind of like this. I lost everything I owned again like a month ago. I got a trailer. I was working with the youth minister in North Texas building barn dominiums, you know? Barns and shops. I mean, houses and shops all in one thing for a barn, big for ranch houses. We've been doing that. Well, I had a trailer up in North Texas a month ago. I'm stuck here because of the virus. Thank the Almighty. He got me up here. I'm in a 2-bedroom house with a bathroom and everything. But a month ago, you know, storm hits North Texas, tornado picks my trailer up, flips it a few times, you know, destroys everything I got. I got to make a trip down there to see if there's anything salvageable. I know my alligator boots will be there.
That's a plus.
You know, but, you know, it's just picking up and starting over again. You know, I always notice that my needs, you know, when I pray and when I give it to the Almighty, my needs are met. I'm not comfortable. I'm not as comfortable as I'd like to be or anything like that. But it brings me joy to be able to help somebody that can't help themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
And I appreciate that. And I think real quick, I'm going to talk about for a second. I want to callfireollyclub.org is the website. You guys definitely have to become a member, because you can actually, you know, Sam would be one of those people that if you had a question or you want a comment, he would give back his knowledge to you, because this is what we do. I mean, myself, I've been doing it 20 years. I mean, obviously not as long as you long. You know, not nearly as long as you've been doing it, but I still love to give back to the community of wrestling by training the up and comers or running shows or giving back to CEC as like I run those shows and try to make those as successful when it comes to people not able to see a normal matchup like a Sam Houston versus Cahagas or for example, you know, or something like that. And I want to thank you for obviously always being super cool. I mean, and obviously you are. And, you know, I think people listening will see that just by this one interview. And I think we're going to have to do it again because there's so much more.
Oh, definitely.
I think we could talk about, you know, and I don't have as much time as I usually do. But, I mean, Do you have
just
anything?
Real quick?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'd like to plug the Patreon. I'm working with Big Pop Productions. They're helping me along as far as the marketing and everything here in the Carolinas. So I'm working with. They have Michael Sam Houston is set up on Patreon. Will Knight is my manager. You can reach us at. You can do the PayPal or whatever through WrestlingLegends2020@gmail.com. If you'd like autographed pictures or whatever, anything like that, please go to there, because all the money on my merchandise is going to help other people, y'all. So I'll sign whatever I can do, because, you know, $10 here, $20 there might be a sheet of plywood to redo somebody's floor, you know?
Yeah.
So every bit helps.
And and I wanted to give you that chance to talk, you know, let everybody know how to get a hold of you and, you know, whatnot, you know?
When it comes to the craft and the business, I'm here to help you. I want to help you. I want to, this is your dream. It's like what off of school, you know, a lot of these guys, this is their dream. You know, if this is your dream, then give it all you got. Don't sit on the sidewalk. Don't sit on the curb and go, oh, I wasn't good enough. Give it your A game. Give it all you've got. If you don't reach for it, nobody in this business is going to reach down and give it to you. You know, without any favors, you know.
And that kind of goes to what I was saying. That's what I was just going to say that at the last thing I was going to end it with, because I could probably just bring you back so that way you guys, you know, can hear some more stories. I know he has tons of stories that I think the listeners would love to hear some more. But what is your advice? The last thing I'll ask you before we get out of here, what is your advice to wrestlers, like up-and-coming wrestlers, you know, or whatnot on – longevity, you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to, stand out or whatever, you know, because everybody nowadays, a lot of these wrestlers all look like, you know, cookie cutters, you know, like cookie cutter wrestlers.
Yeah.
And, you know, not all of them.
Best thing
to
do.
Some stand out, you know?
Yeah. But what I would tell them was the same advice Hector Guerrero gave to me when I first started wrestling down in Florida. He told me, he said, Sam, never be second best. Now, that doesn't mean don't be second in a foot race or something like that, but it means when it's on the line, you give it everything you've got. You never settle for being second best or less than what you know you can be. You give it your all. This is your dream. Take advantage.
For sure.
Yeah.
And like I said, I can you know, we can go on all night. I know that. So, like, I want to thank you for being on the show, man. We'll get you back.
Oh,
I'll
yeah,
get
Bill,
you up
no
and
problem.
Figure out another time to get you back on here, and we'll call Road Stories with Sam Houston, and it'll just be road stories the whole time. I think that'd be pretty entertaining, you know, and
that'll work.
And you know what I mean? I think that'd be pretty entertaining, but like I said, guys, thank you for listening. This is the Biggest Little Show Radio. My guest tonight was Sam Houston. He was an awesome stories. If you're listening to this, and this is, like I said, next Thursday, we do got one of, I think, somebody you're real familiar with, former WWF, WCW referee Billy Silverman will be on this show next Thursday. And then, just like I said, on Tuesday, we also have the show Vendetta Pro Radio. So you guys, if you're listening to this later on in the night, Sam, one more time, how can someone get a hold of you? Let's say they have a question on Facebook or whatnot. Can they get a hold of you?
They got a question. Yes, they can reach me at Michael Sam Houston on Facebook. I'm a public figure, so just anybody can, you know, my page is open to everybody. So just send me a message request or whatever. And then I'm also, I've got Sam Houston Brand on YouTube. I don't know if you can reach me there or not. Sam Houston Fan Nation on Facebook. I have almost 5,000 friends. But you can join Sam Houston Fan Nation, or you can't be my personal friend. You can be a part of the group. And then through Patreon, it's Michael Sam Houston. And, man, I appreciate it all. And, man, it's been my pleasure, and I've really enjoyed this, Billy. And holler back at me, man. All right?
I will, man. I want to do this again. I know I have a few people. I mean,
okay.
I know a lot of people that want to do this again and hear your stories. And, like I said, this is the Biggest Little Show on radio. I always like to – in the show with like a music or what, any kind of song. This song is called Steel Panther, and the song is called Party Like Tomorrow Is the New World. I know we've all done that. Am I right, Sam? And so this is Steel Panther, Party Like Tomorrow Is the New World, because you never know what tomorrow brings, like Sam was saying. He has a great story. I look forward to hearing back from him. I'll definitely be talking to him. You guys, thanks a lot for listening. Thank you again, once again, Sam Houston, man. I love your stories. I love them even in Vegas. And, you know, that rib story, I'm always going to remember that. That's going to be amazing to tell my friends, because that's something that I'm always going to remember. And like you said, wrestling, you're always learning. I learned just by listening to this podcast, and I know others will. So thank you once again, Sam.
All right, bro. You take care.
You too, man. Take care.
All right. Absolutely.